Welcome back to the Theia Podcast, where we talk with the brightest minds in the worlds of tech, finance, economics, and startups. And our guest today crosses and converges through all of those different fields. Brendan Quinn, co-founder and managing partner at Cantilever Advisors. Brendan, how are you?
Great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, we talked before the show. It's been about 2 years since we've spoken. A lot has changed in both of our lives, both of our careers since then. But there's a lot going on, particularly with Bitcoin venture capital, especially after the election. You and I were talking about it before we came on. Before we do like a high level overview of what Cantilever is, I want to ask you, post-election, what is Bitcoin VC like? How are people talking about investing in Bitcoin companies? What's the general vibe now that that election is behind us?
Look, I think it's not an overstatement to say the tone has shifted markedly. I think in many ways, irrespective of the outcome of the election, Bitcoin itself was going to be fine. It had cleared a lot of the major regulatory hurdles, things like the ETF approval and whatnot. But in terms of the infrastructure, which is really the way we think about this, is like what enables Bitcoin to be moved from the absolutely scarce, best monetary asset that humanity has ever seen to a fully function, global, apolitical, digitally native monetary and financial network. You need good infrastructure to do that. And make no mistake that with more of a pro-innovation, favorable regulatory backdrop, it makes entrepreneurs more equipped and more empowered to build the products and services that are necessary to really take Bitcoin to that next level, to a full-blown financial system.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seems like a lot of the trepidation that people may have had prior to the election has been replaced with extreme enthusiasm. We know that he hasn't just been outspoken and avowedly pro-crypto. He's been speaking about Bitcoin specifically, which is a huge, huge development for Bitcoin as an asset, right? We've kind of seen this shift. I'm wondering your thoughts on the shift away from kind of this broader crypto language that was used in basically every cycle until now. It seems to me, judging by the price of something like the ETH-BTC pair, that crypto that isn't Bitcoin is going out of fashion, and in its place, Bitcoin is becoming the preeminent, only worthwhile asset in this space that you and I have known is the case for very long. Do you agree with that? Do you think in your experience over these last several months, in this year and a half, 2 years, have you seen like the crypto fad kind of taking a back seat and Bitcoin come to the forefront?
Yeah, I think that's very fair characterization of things. I mean, certainly you think about things from a geopolitical perspective. No one's talking about Ethereum or Solana and, you know, in nation state adoption, strategic stockpiles, things of that nature. I think that also a part of this, and you referenced the ETH-BTC pair, not a great looking chart if you're an ETH maxi over the last couple of years. I think part of that too is just like, even retail is smartening up to the games that are played within the broader crypto ecosystem in terms of, you know, the pump and dumps and listing on public exchanges and ultimately institutional investors being able to dump on retail in many ways. I think the game is kind of up in that. And you look at what's going on with meme coins. Like, people love to gamble and it's like, that's okay. And that's like, that's free market capitalism. Like, let it happen. But no one's like, the interest in these like, the utility tokens and the crypto VC stuff, which, by the way, like, they raised $50 to $70 million, you know, between 2020 and 2022. So like, there was a lot of capital that was poured into this. It feels like the market is kind of wising up to a lot of that. Maybe not 100% of that, because you look at something like stable coins are fairly interesting, and that has been largely a kind of broader crypto source of innovation. Beyond Bitcoin as this emerging store of value, stable coins is like a way to proliferate dollar hegemony with less friction. Like, I think there's a lot of projects in the broader crypto complex that are really struggling to find that product market fit.
Yeah, it seems so. You talk about dollar hegemony. One of my beliefs for a very long time, and Nick Bhatia shares this belief, is that over time, as Bitcoin grows and it monetizes, it's going to integrate more closely with traditional capital markets and financial markets more broadly. And it's going to become this pristine collateral, right? This collateral that's better ostensibly than US treasuries because it's 24/7. It's extremely liquid, right? At any point in time, you could call in that collateral. So I guess I'll ask you, because this was one of your latest tweets, that Bitcoin as pristine collateral is an idea whose time has come. Talk to us a little bit, explain to the viewers what the concept of Bitcoin as pristine collateral means, and kind of where we are on that journey to Bitcoin becoming a widely used collateral type.
Yeah, I think that Bitcoin is pristine collateral, really. Like, we think about it in three different ways. One is Bitcoin has 24/7, 365 liquidity that is unique to any fungible asset globally. It is absolutely scarce, so that obviously helps it, you know, accrue its monetary premium, which is what you're seeing in the fiat price appreciation. And near and dear to Theia, I think the ability to actually distribute the custody across multiple parties to basically solve for counterpart or significant reduction in counterparty risk. I think it's those three things that really make Bitcoin as pristine collateral not just an idea anymore. It's actually something that's being employed and invested behind. In terms of, like, when we think about investing, like, we can get into, you know, the specifics of that if you'd like, but where we like to be outsized in terms of our exposure for our LPs is on this theme exactly. Investing in businesses that are leaning into this Bitcoin as this emergent store of value / pristine collateral asset, and businesses that are finding creative ways to help take Bitcoin, like embed Bitcoin into the portfolios, embed Bitcoin into other forms of collateral, that more traditional forms of collateral that people think about, such as real estate. The list goes on. But I think, like, Bitcoin as pristine collateral is something that the market has, it's not a new thing that's been talked about in the space. It's been that narrative has been around for years, but I really do think that people are waking up to it, particularly when you see the fragility of the existing base of collateral, i.e., you know, sovereign debt, showing the fragility that it's been showing over the last 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you take a look at the unrealized losses on US treasuries that were on the balance sheets of banks. I mean, you know it very well, right? The chart that I'm referencing, unrealized, you know, returns on US treasuries, like, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars just totally evaporated as a result of interest rate risk, you know, with the Fed hiking rates so aggressively. Obviously now they're cutting rates, but, you know, it begs the question, do we want a central entity who's in charge of the value of this collateral that I'm keeping on my books? Because that can be very dangerous, particularly when you add leverage into the mix. So you mentioned, you know, these are the kind of companies that are involved in integrating Bitcoin into traditional collateral types. Those are companies that you and your LPs are very interested in. Talk to us a little bit about Cantilever Advisors. You know, what do you guys do over there? What are the kind of types of companies that you work with?
Yeah, so happy to. So maybe I'll just give a little bit of backstory on myself as it'll inform, you know, how Cantilever came to be. But I spent 15 years in traditional finance at a house, unfortunately a household name now, Silicon Valley Bank. While I was at Silicon Valley Bank, I helped build out a private credit investment practice within the bank. We raised some proprietary third-party capital. As part of that, really focusing on investing in growth stage technology business, mostly B2B SaaS businesses. I got into Bitcoin in 2017 as part of that work through an investment that Silicon Valley Bank ultimately made in Circle. That's public information now. So they were building out the infrastructure for USDC at the time, and we were helping them finance an acquisition, around that build out. And that was my first foray into the rabbit hole, so to speak. Had heard about Bitcoin and full of times before that, but ultimately it was that deal that forced me to kind of go down the rabbit hole. And then we ended up closing that investment, and then literally to be top ticking it in the dead cat bounce of 2018 of the 2017 run. So timing is everything. Stayed in it, you know, managed the investment through the bear market. And that was what really kept me in it. And then the cherry on top was obviously the pandemic, K-shaped recovery, unprecedented monetary and fiscal response. And it's just like I was a minted Bitcoiner at that point. Ended up staying at SVB for another year after that, and left in July of 2021, did a 6-month sabbatical, and then ultimately decided to dedicate the rest of my career to Cantilever, starting that in the beginning of 2022. We are, as you mentioned, Bitcoin only investment firm. You know, our core thesis is that Bitcoin is the best money monetary asset that humans have ever encountered, largely due to its absolute scarcity. It is in the process of a monetization, and in parallel with that, is in the process of financializing through infrastructure that enables the increased utility of Bitcoin as an asset and the reduced friction of being able to adopt Bitcoin as an asset. And so what we invest in is basically we're providing capital to support the best entrepreneurs building in the Bitcoin space. Where we're a little different than your prototypical Bitcoin venture firm is that we actually invest in a mix of funds, so other Bitcoin venture funds themselves as LPs, mm-hmm. as well as direct. We do that to maximize diversification for our LPs, really having exposure to all the entrepreneurial activity across the Bitcoin space, store of value, medium exchange, unit of account style applications that are being built. And then where we will go direct is on, like I said, on those businesses that are really leveraging Bitcoin as this pristine collateral, the intersection of Bitcoin and credit are like these categories where we really want to be overweight for our investors, because we do think there's some path dependence to, before Bitcoin can become a ubiquitous medium of exchange, it's got to be a kind of consensus as a store of value. And so we want to be overweight kind of that part of the adoption curve where we feel like we've really inflected. And, you know, I think we're, things like the ETF and the geopolitical conversations that are happening are, in effect, the market starting to validate the view as Bitcoin as a bona fide global macro asset in competition with other store of value assets such as gold, real estate, and sovereign debt.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like, I mean, for me, the launch of the ETFs was extremely encouraging. If you look at IBIT specifically, it was, I think, the fastest single ETF of all time to reach something like 40. I can't exactly remember the number. I think it was, you know, one something billion. I think $40 billion AUM, this single vehicle, a huge number. And it reached it in only like 114 days compared to, you know, other massive ETFs, you know, broad market ETFs and things like that. It beat them by at least a third of the time or a fourth of the time. And to me, that speaks to, just like you said, Bitcoin is now being treated as a bona fide global macro asset right up there with gold. And we're still only a tenth of the way to gold. Bitcoin right now, the price behind me, like 95, 720, we're like a $1.91 or $2 trillion asset. We're still a tenth of the way to gold. And so as we get there, as we approach gold parity, which will probably happen at a much higher value, right? Gold might reach 25 trillion
sure.
before the time we monetize and reach parity at that level. Between now and then, what businesses do you think are going to crop up on the Bitcoin landscape that don't currently exist, or a few of them exist, but there's like a huge need? Between now and then, when we reach gold parity, what kind of businesses do you think you'll start to see more frequently come to the fore?
I think this idea of fusing Bitcoin with legacy forms of collateral like real estate are very interesting, right? It's like you think about Bitcoin's pristine collateral characteristics, and you can combine, and it being that early, as you mentioned, in its monetization, you can really supercharge the return profile of assets like fixed income real estate by just, you know, embedding some Bitcoin into that. I think that you will see, I mean, there's conversations at that geopolitical level of using Bitcoin to back, like, you know, there's back the US treasuries in very small degrees. And so I think business models that can really combine different facets of more traditional forms of collateral with Bitcoin, definitely underrepresented in the market today, but I think will become much more of a commonplace as this theme of Bitcoin as pristine collateral continues to permeate throughout the global markets.
Fantastic. I couldn't agree more, right? Because one of the ways that you bring Bitcoin skeptics on board is by showing them very simple data of how they can, as you said, supercharge the return profile of these traditional investments by just adding a little bit of Bitcoin into it, right? Adding a little bit of salt and pepper, if you will, and seeing what it can do. And then over time, Bitcoin grows larger and larger and larger. A lot of that volatility is stripped away. And then Bitcoin just gets used as itself on its own, right? As collateral. One of the things that you've spoken about a few times is the Bitcoin hurdle rate, right? So explain to our viewers what the Bitcoin hurdle rate is and how anyone can use it to gauge whether or not they should invest in something or pursue something. Because it is, now that Bitcoin has proven for 15 years to, it's never had over a four-year period, over its entire lifespan, a negative compound annual growth rate. A negative four-year compound annual growth rate, the lowest it's ever been was like 24%. Right now it's 50%. And so it's got a very proven track record of appreciating to a huge degree if you hold it for at least 4 years. So talk to us about a little bit about what the Bitcoin hurdle rate is and then how that impacts your investment decisions over at Cantilever.
Yeah, it's a very deep question and one that we could spend hours on. But this is core to every single capital allocation decision that we're making. And we believe that any entrepreneur building any product or service that fundamentally understands Bitcoin also embeds, which is when you're making any capital allocation decision, you have a choice. You can either HODL Bitcoin with that or make said investment. And if you're going to make said investment, that investment needs to have a reasonable probability of outperforming the performance of Bitcoin on the defined timeline of that investment, you know, 5, 10 years, whatever it is. You threw out some percentages about, like, you know, Bitcoin's appreciation, and we've talked about how early Bitcoin is in its monetization. I mean, we're a tenth of the way to gold. And right, that's, I think we would both agree that that's scratching the surface in terms of the whatever, you know, form of terminal value Bitcoin represents. It's, you know, it's beyond that even. And so that's a tall order, right? And so what I think is amazing about this is just the discipline that is coming into the capital allocation decisions, right? Bitcoin kind of embedding this discipline around how entrepreneurs allocate capital to invest in their businesses. And you map this to traditional venture, which is where I spent 15 years of my career. I mean, it, like, companies were entirely valued on their P&L, right? And it was basically growth at all costs mindset, and with almost no regard for operational efficiency, free cash flow, you know, profitability, these types of metrics. And if you really think about it long enough, you're like, oh, it's because the unit of account is being debased effectively. And so you're just kind of chasing higher and higher rates of return. I think Bitcoin fundamentally changes that calculus. And so, you know, whether you want to throw a number on it, 50, 60, 70% CAGR, like that's a very high bar now. Whereas, like, in traditional venture world, it's like, you know, you're basically like, you're trying to outrun inflation, which is, you know, 2-3% if you believe the, you know, the kind of public. So what this does is it forces this discipline around capital. And so for us, it's like, how do you actually beat that as a business, as an operator? You know, we think that the way to have the best chance of doing this is to really think about value accrual in any business, not just through the P&L, as traditional markets tend to think in, you know, PE, revenue, EBITDA multiples, really with no kind of regard for the balance sheet, but really thinking about this idea of value accrual happening with the balance sheet as well as the income statement. And so how do you outperform Bitcoin? It's a combination of a well-executed Bitcoin treasury reserve strategy, and you pair that with an operating business that's generating increasing levels of free cash flow that at a minimum can be used to be swept into accruing more Bitcoin to the balance sheet. And if, like, you want to supercharge it, I mean, just look at what Michael Saylor is doing. He is using the free cash flow of the legacy business to effectively arbitrage the capital markets to raise capital with the explicit use of buy more Bitcoin. And so it's not to say that every business has to, like, go full Saylor on this, but I think this idea of thinking about value accrual through the balance sheet as well as the P&L, and optimizing your P&L and your capital allocation decisions in such a way where you're spending as minimally as you have to drive the ability to drive the ability to increase free cash flow to accrue more Bitcoin. It's a tall order, but the balance sheet gives you that beta to Bitcoin. You're going to benefit from, you know, the fiat appreciation of Bitcoin vis-a-vis what's sitting on your balance sheet. And then the alpha comes from your ability to build a good business.
Right. Exactly. You're building, you're providing value. In providing that value, you're maximizing your free cash flow. You're putting as much of that as you can into Bitcoin in order to supercharge your balance sheet, right? That's how you begin to attempt to outperform Bitcoin's
Correct.
insane compound annual growth rate. And so, this strategy obviously has been popularized tremendously over the last 4 years. Michael Saylor has pretty much led the charge on this. You now see hordes of companies, both public and private. You have Semler Scientific, Metaplanet, a couple of others in the public equity markets globally who are doing this. And you probably see hundreds, if not thousands, of more private companies, even ones that we don't know about, right? Small mom and pop businesses that are doing the same. In your experience, have you seen that businesses are adopting a Bitcoin treasury strategy in a higher frequency, and those businesses that may have already had some Bitcoin on their balance sheet are planning on buying more of it, like increasing the amount that they're purchasing?
I mean, I think we like our sample size is a little it's going to skew these metrics because we're exclusively focused on investing, basically investing in Bitcoin businesses. So, I mean, it's kind of table stakes for every business that's building a Bitcoin. Certainly that the ones that have the best chance of delivering outsized returns, being able to beat Bitcoin, are employing some version of this strategy. As far as do I think that the broader trend that will continue, I think on the margin, yes. I'm not like overly bullish that there's going to be a ton more. I hope I'm wrong on this, by the way, but I don't think there's going to be a ton more companies, particularly in like the public markets, that are going to be employing this strategy for non-Bitcoin, like that are non-Bitcoin native businesses. But again, I hope I'm wrong on that. Clearly, the FASB, accounting rule changes are gonna it increases the aperture of being able to do that. I guess I'm just a little more guarded and, for every MicroStrategy and Semler Scientific, there's a lot of bureaucracy that needs to kind of play out in these public and larger private businesses in order for that to happen. But the longer this goes and the more consensus Bitcoin becomes, you should expect to see the rate of just ordinary businesses employing a version of this Bitcoin treasury reserve strategy certainly increasing.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about, Bitcoin companies, specifically, people that might be early or even, people who might be a little bit further along, on their journey as a company. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you find most prevalent with these Bitcoin-focused companies that you're working with? And how are you at Cantilever helping these businesses overcome them?
I think the biggest constraint that exists in the entirety of Bitcoin VC is access capital. Look, I think we talked about crypto VC. I mean, crypto VC has had no problem raising tens of billions of dollars, from 2020 to 2022. Bitcoin VC as an entire category is less than $1 billion of AUM. And so it's very, very small relative to the broader crypto ecosystem. Which is interesting in the sense that like Bitcoin is the most proven, the most proven asset, the most regulatory clarity, largest market cap. It's been fascinating to see, like, and this is a big reason why the decision was made to start Cantilever. It was just like this wild misallocation of capital between crypto VC and the basically dearth of capital within Bitcoin VC. But over the last like 4 years in particular, Bitcoin VC has grown up a lot. I mean, pre-2020, it was pretty much a non-existent industry. There were a couple firms that were, running small funds that, weren't in part participating in investing in Bitcoin businesses. But really, with the rise of things like the Lightning Network and some of these scaling protocols that sit on top of Bitcoin, it unlocked the ability for entrepreneurs to come in and build real products and services like on the Bitcoin tech stack. And so, but that, I think that capital constraint continues to be a challenge. And so I think the hope through this bull cycle is that, as you're describing, there's this continued bifurcation between Bitcoin and the broader digital asset ecosystem. And there being, maybe it doesn't flip entirely, but a significant amount of those dollars that were raised within crypto VC are either redeployed and invested into the Bitcoin businesses themselves, or the allocators that committed to a crypto VC firm are considering making a play in Bitcoin VC. Admittedly, that's still very early for the institutions, but I think there's the zeitgeist on that, and the mindset on that is definitely changing. It's going to take some time. It's platforms like this to help drive the narrative and the education around why Bitcoin is fundamentally different and why Bitcoin, why it might make sense to have some Bitcoin VC exposure in your Bitcoin overall Bitcoin, portfolio strategy. But I think the access to capital is definitely getting better. Obviously, the price action is supportive of that. People starting to pay attention and care again. But I think there's a lot of entrepreneurial talent that has moved and will continue to move into this space. They need that initial burst of activation energy, which is what venture capital is designed to do, to help them take the idea of the product or service they want to build and actually create it and then drive distribution to it in the market.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Access to capital. These capital allocators are still largely, if anything, participating in crypto writ large. And then a lot of the people who may have been participating in crypto, they got burned 2022, and they're no longer in the market. I do think that as Bitcoin grows as an asset, as these ETFs get more and more popular, we now have BlackRock, our very own Fidelity here in Boston, for you and me, Brendan, who are basically like the de facto Bitcoin salespeople. I do think that institutional interest will rise. But to your point, I think one of the gaps that really does need to be filled in order for these major capital allocators to come into the game is a play, is a company coming onto the scene that can bring those two worlds together of some traditional collateral type, be it, fixed income real estate, and combine it with Bitcoin or something else. I think more companies like that need to come onto the scene in order for the really huge money to be particularly interested in this Bitcoin space. And then I think, as we have a few of those, I think it just starts snowballing down a hill. There are only so many, buy Bitcoin on this app things that can come out. Right. There are only so many Bitcoin credit cards that can be made, right? These big players aren't interested in that. They're interested in, if Bitcoin's going from here, $2 trillion to here, $900 trillion, right? Being the denominator for all of global wealth, I want to invest in a business that helps tap into everything up here, not the retail market, these Bitcoin credit cards or what have you. Would you tend to agree with that? Once these companies come around, then this real institutional capital will begin to be unlocked.
Yeah, 100%. I think retail has done a hell of a job getting Bitcoin from an idea to the, $2 trillion asset that it is today. But in order for it to continue to monetize, you need bigger and bigger pools of capital to drive that growth, and that's where the institutions come in. Some institutions they're so big they can't play in Bitcoin until it's a $5 or $10 trillion asset class in and of itself, right? And so there's like this chicken and the egg thing. It's like you would think that they would want to be able to front run that, but it's actually no. Like in order for it to move the needle on their broader portfolio, it actually has to be much bigger than it is. So that's what I think. This idea of like fusing Bitcoin as like almost like a call option or a teaser or like a stock option. Like we used to do a lot of like equity kickers in the debt investments that I used to make at SVB. I think about Bitcoin almost like as like this equity kicker when you like embed it with something more traditional like real estate, in that if Bitcoin went to zero, the real estate asset is going to underwrite just fine. But if Bitcoin actually performs, now all of a sudden it's the best performing real estate asset in your entire portfolio. And so I think we need more of that. And that is a way to reduce the friction of getting the institutions to play in the Bitcoin space to a meaningful degree, and also help to get them off of zero.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, if like other assets, if you break it down, we've all seen the chart, these different asset classes, the size of it globally. Real estate is like 325 to 350 trillion. Global debt is like right around there too. Broad money just kind of floating around is like another 100 something trillion. Stocks is around 100 trillion. And so, if somebody can come around and then attach Bitcoin to the coattails of one of these other asset classes, be it some kind of global debt instrument that people can buy and have very readily liquid access to at their bank, BNY Mellon, for example, that now has the ability to custody Bitcoin, all of a sudden, institutional investors may be interested because the global debt market is $300 trillion in size. Same thing with real estate, right? If these products come around. So retail has brought us to $2 trillion. It'll continue bringing us, higher and higher and higher. But, to really kick off that accelerant, that rocket fuel, that'll bring Bitcoin from a $2 trillion asset to gold parity and beyond, 100 trillion, 300 trillion, 500 trillion, eventually becoming the world's denominator for all of its assets, all other asset classes, that it needs to kind of, businesses need to come around that attach Bitcoin to the coattails of one of these other major macro asset classes so that these investors have a reason to play ball.
Plus one.
I love it. I love it. Fantastic. So I'm interested. What over the next, like, obviously we have Trump, he's going to be in office for 4 years. Over the next 12 to 18 months, Bitcoin's probably going to, you know, continue resuming this bull market. We've been consolidating at $95,000, which is an insane thing to say. you know, if you told that to me 5 years ago, that'd just be completely wild, right? We were dreaming of these levels, and now the market is bored at these levels, right? All signs point to a continued bull market over the next year. We'll probably hit something like 150, 200K. I don't care about price targets. I just know that we're in a bull market. And so for you, what are some of the things that you're most excited about, right? When it comes to Bitcoin VC, Bitcoin businesses, what do you see on the horizon that really excites you?
In terms of Bitcoin VC and Bitcoin businesses themselves, I think it is this just continued, I think Bitcoin's price is this leading indicator for people, institutions just to care. Like I think you described it very well. It's like, we're just under $100,000. It still feels like pretty rational out there with a very interesting like macro backdrop. We've got, you know, the geopolitical conversations we've talked about. You get into like some of the on-chain, you know, activity. It looks like a bull market, but it's by no means like overheated by any stretch of the imagination. And so I think that you know, the hardest part about building in this space is the cyclicality of it, right? It's just like it will run in these cycles, and you know, maybe it goes longer this time, maybe it doesn't, but you got to really take advantage of, you know, the striking while the iron is hot. And I would agree with you that I think we're in a pretty constructive environment as it pertains to price over the next, you know, 6 to 18 months for sure. As far as like the businesses themselves, I think it's just like really continuing to lean into the education. And I'm beating a dead horse here, but I feel like it's like just building out that infrastructure to take Bitcoin beyond an asset and really increase its utility. Embedding it in other forms of collateral would be one way to do that, but also reducing its friction of being adopted at global scale. And yeah, I think the future is pretty bright for Bitcoin entrepreneurship. And you know, I our role in this, and any Bitcoin VC's role in this, is to help reduce the friction of getting bigger and bigger pools of capital allocating into investing in the infrastructure around Bitcoin to really help it kind of continue to grow and get to the next level of becoming this global apolitical financial system that we all, you know, believe it can become.
Yeah. We all know that it can be that. Certainly developments have occurred this year, which in our wildest dreams, we couldn't have predicted they would happen so soon, right? The sitting U.S. president, who is going to be inaugurated in a month and some change, is avowedly pro-Bitcoin. You have sovereign wealth funds talking about allocating to it. You have nations who are talking about front-running a potential United States strategic reserve. Major developments. So it's very ripe for Bitcoin entrepreneurs with a good idea to start building. Right. And, you know, you guys are making it easier for Bitcoin native businesses to build. And so the question I have for you, you know, before we go would be, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs that are building in the Bitcoin ecosystem today?
Just stay disciplined, stay nimble, and stay small, stay disciplined, stay nimble. And I think it comes back to this: Bitcoin is the hurdle rate. Executing your business with that mindset that we all have as Bitcoiners. I think we're, you know, you look at something like what's going on with Doge, I think we're probably going to start to see like actually less is more. And so not overinvesting too soon and being really judicious and making more effective and efficient allocation of capital decisions. But even before that, like just start, just go, just it's time to build. It's like this is no longer a cottage closet, you know, dark corners of the market. The ecosystem. This is a growing, proliferating time. The dynamism of Bitcoin entrepreneurship is alive and well. I mean, we're seeing a lot of interesting talent, you know, kind of moving into the Bitcoin space from places like Silicon Valley, New York, and Boston, which have been these kind of traditional hubs of entrepreneurial activity. So I think if you're an entrepreneur, think you're a Bitcoiner and thinking about making the move, it's like the time is, this is no better time. On a risk adjusted basis, there's no better time to be starting a Bitcoin business. So just go out there and
get it done. And like Brendan and I were talking about, there are so many different opportunities now for you to be able to capture that upside in Bitcoin, demonetizing all these other assets, right? So many different business opportunities. It's all a matter of going after it, pursuing that idea, taking that risk. Brendan Quinn, thanks so much for coming on to the Theia podcast today. Before we go, any final thoughts on anything we discussed, your outlook for the remainder of the year? I give the microphone to you.
That's been great. Great reconnecting, Joe. You know, I think that, you know, just the vibes are high, but stay vigilant, stay disciplined. You know, there's, you know, things tend to revert to the mean, and you know, as they will conceivably get good and they will be bad again. And so it's like just kind of trying to stay as level and you know, even keel as you can through that, and you know, just focus on whatever business or, you know, entrepreneurial activity that you're employing. And you know, it's great to be with you, and looking forward to seeing what 2025 has in store for us all.
Absolutely. And likewise, Brendan. And before we go, where would you like to send people to find more information about yourself and also Cantilever?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, fairly active on LinkedIn, playing our best boomer that we can. We got a podcast of our own called the Cantilever Podcast. I'm assuming we could probably link to all this in the show notes here. But yeah, those are the best places to find us.
All right, fantastic. So you heard the man. If you want to connect with Brendan or Cantilever, you'll find all the links in the description or the show notes, depending on whatever platform you're listening to this. And once again, Brendan Quinn, Cantilever Advisors, thanks so much for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe.